Good evening. Welcome to the Spring 2015 Green Living Seminar Series at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts. Each spring semester, we invite a series of experts to campus to present on various aspects of sustainability. This semester, our series topic is called Issues in Climate Change. Over the course of this semester, we've invited speakers, expert speakers, to talk about various aspects and issues related to climate change, including policy, nature conservation, science, activism, advocacy, and tonight on energy and electricity. Tonight's speaker is Mr. Eric Wilkinson. Eric is the Senior External Affairs Representative with ISO New England. As Senior External Affairs Representative, Eric works with technical and legal staff to identify legislative issues and develop appropriate corporate strategies and positions. Eric has responsibility for environmental, climate change, and renewable energy issues and works to promote ISO New England's interests and positions. Eric serves as the lead for external affairs on both the ISO's energy efficiency and distributed generation forecasts. He also manages relationships with Vermont legislators, regulators, and staffs other key public policy officials with jurisdiction over energy and energy-related issues. We have about an hour for tonight's seminar and for questions and answers. And tonight, Mr. Wilkinson will speak on ISO New England. Please help me welcome Mr. Wilkinson to MCLA. Thank you.
Good evening. How are you all doing tonight?
Good.
Pleasure to be here. A little tiny little bit more about myself. My name is Eric Wilkinson. I'm a lawyer by training. I went to Vermont Law School. So I'm not an engineer. I'm not an economist. And a lot of what we do is deep into the weeds on both economics and engineering. So I'm happy to take questions. I'll do my best to answer them. But if you're an engineering fan or a super economics person, I might be a little bit out of my realm, but we'll go for there. If you have questions, just let me know. Happy to answer them as we go along. So I'm going to dive in. This is an overview presentation about ISO New England, who we are and what we do. So the ISO stands for the Independent System Operator. We occupy a little bit of an odd space in the region in that we are located in Massachusetts. We work in the six New England states, but we are regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission down in Washington, D.C. So we do a lot of work, interaction with each of the states, but they don't have any technical jurisdiction over us. That happens at the federal level. We are the reliability coordinator for New England. So that means we have to ensure that the mandatory reliability standards for electricity are met here, and those are set by NERC, the North American Energy Reliability Corporation. We've been doing this for a couple of decades now, and we are really in the business because the electricity market is restructured. And do people know generally what that means, the restructured versus sort of the old traditional? So before the 1990s, almost all across the United States, the utilities are what we call vertically integrated. And it still happens out in the West and in the South, where a utility company, they own the generator, they own the transmission that gets the power from the generator to the distribution system, which brings it to homes and businesses. Back in the 1990s, the states decided to break up those vertically integrated utilities. So now generators are owned by one company, transmission is generally owned by another company, and then the distribution is owned by a third company. The theory of breaking that up is to allow greater competition. So if you want to start a power generation company, it's easier to break into the market than it would be if you have to compete with someone who's vertically integrated. So, and when that happened, they needed a sort of neutral third party to help manage the development of the network, so of the grid. So that's our role. And we are independent. The I stands for independent. So we don't own any generation. We don't own any transmission. We own a lot of desks, chairs, and really high-end computers, of which that is not one. But we run the markets on some huge computers I know nothing about. So, and we're a 501c3. So there's no shareholders to make happy. There's no profit we're chasing. Our revenue that comes in to pay our bills comes from a transaction from the buyers. When the buyers and sellers of electricity do a transaction in our market, a little bit if taken off to pay our costs. And that budget is an annual budget. It's a very open process how that's set. And then the FERC down in Washington, D.C. approves or disapproves our budget that we submit. Reliability of the bulk power system is really our number one prime objective. And we do that really in three ways. This is an overview. I'll talk more about each of these three in a second. We operate the grid day-to-day, 24/7. We administer and develop the wholesale energy markets. And finally, we do the planning for the power system, mainly the transmission system in the region. ISO New England is a small segment of a much larger electric power system. The Eastern Interconnection, basically everything from the Rockies east, is one giant electrically connected machine. So if you plug in something to the wall here, it's literally connected by a wire all the way down to Florida and out to the Rockies. Quebec up there, they're their own interconnection. Texas is its own interconnection, and then the West has its own interconnection as well. ISO, there are ISOs across the region, but not covering the whole entire North America. We are the smallest, but I always say we are the scrappiest. We are tied to Quebec. I'll talk a little bit about more of that, and also the 2003 blackout that we had, which covered a lot of the eastern part of the United States, resulted in mandatory reliability standards that we now oversee at ISO New England. A little bit about the electricity system in New England. There's 6.5 million meters out there, so 6.5 million customers basically throughout the six states. Our all-time peak was a little over 28,000 megawatts in the summertime, a little over 22,000 megawatts in the wintertime. We do anticipate growth in both peak and energy use throughout the region, but things like energy efficiency are really putting a damper on how much that is growing. And I'll talk more about those things in a sec. So that was the sort of electric system. Now the transmission system is represented on this blurry and faint map. There's about 8,500 miles of high voltage transmission lines. And those big, that's what we deal with. We don't deal with the little power lines that are rumping down the streets here. It's the big ones you see usually when you're driving on the highway. Those are the big 315 or 115 kV lines. We have 13 interconnections with our neighbors in Canada and New York. We are generally an importing system. Last year, about 16% of the total power used was imported. We can export at times. In December, there was a huge problem in Quebec. They lost their giant transmission lines, and we ended up sending power up to them to help them out. And we go back and forth with New York as well if there's trouble in New York. We've invested about $7 billion in transmission lines since 2002, and it seems like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, the amount that was invested in transmission was essentially zero. So we are paying some catch-up on that front. There's about $4.5 billion more transmission that's sort of in our study area right now that will probably be developed. On the generation side, there are over 350 generators in New England that we control. We have a peak of about 31,000, so total capacity. And people understand the difference between capacity on one hand and energy. So capacity is the ability to provide power. So your car might have a 200 horsepower engine in it, but when you're driving up and down the streets, you're not using all those 200 horsepower, right? So the 31,000 is the total we could generate if all the generators were turned up all the way and cranking away. There's about 11,000 megawatts of proposed generation that's out there. We expect some retirements. I'll talk more about retirements later on. We have around 700 megawatts of active demand response. And by that, I mean companies who can contract with other companies. I don't know if you've ever gone into a Walmart or a grocery store or something on a hot summer day. Sometimes you go in and sort of half the lights are out. Those companies are participating in a demand response program. So they're lowering the energy use throughout their, you know, if it's Walmart, they own 150 stores or whatever. They can cut electricity on a pretty big scale by doing things like that. So we have 750 megawatts of that. We have over 1,400 megawatts of energy efficiency resources as well, which really help control energy use here in New England. So getting back to our three main responsibilities, I mentioned operating the power system. So in Holyoke, we have a control room. Looks a little bit like NASA. Huge banks of computers, highly trained engineers who are in charge of running the system on top of a lot of automated computer programming. And we dispatch all those 350 generators every minute of every day, all the time. And we dispatch them based on price. So if we need 15,000 megawatts at any particular minute, we'll take the cheapest amount of power we can get. If that's only 10,000 megawatts, then we take the next increment of more expensive power until we meet that 15,000 mark or whatever the megawatt value is that we need at that minute. So we do that. It's economic dispatch. It's pretty similar to how a lot of the other ISOs run, but it's based on price. We coordinate with our neighbors in Quebec to know when power's coming in and power's going out. We also coordinate with all of the generators and all the transmission owners. So if they need to do planned maintenance, we don't let them all do it at one time. Otherwise, we'd run into some problems. The second thing we do is administer the wholesale energy markets in the region. And there are really three major types of energy markets. We have just the energy market, which is actually the buying and selling of power. And so that happens every 5 minutes. There's a market, there's a day-ahead market, there's a million iterations of this market, but that's really where the generators come. They say, I have this much power to sell at this price, and the load-serving entities say, okay, I need this much power to serve my customers, and they do transactions all the time. We also have something called the forward capacity market. Now, the forward capacity market provides revenues for resources who promise to be available in the future. So it's a 3 year out into the future. So they say, I am going to build a 100 megawatt plant. It'll be ready in a year and a half, and the market will pay them for that ability to provide capacity out in the future. There's also a much smaller ancillary services market out there, which provides revenues for some resources that can provide particular benefits to the system. And to give you guys sort of an example of the ballpark of the value of these markets, energy is the largest by far segment of these markets. It's in the dark blue up there. Those are in billions of dollars. So between $5 and $12 billion a year is spent on energy throughout New England. The capacity market is up there in the orange. A little over $1 billion every year is spent on this capacity market to provide revenue for resources who are coming into the future. And then the ancillary services is so small it barely makes these graphs. Our third major responsibility is planning the electric system. We can do this in several ways. First, we have to plan to mandatory reliability standards. And basically that means the power has to stay on during the peak day of the year. So the peak day is almost always in the summertime, really hot, really humid day. It's usually when we have a heat wave that's maybe 3 or 4 days long, it's usually that fourth day, that fourth and last day. People are sick and tired. Everyone's cranking up their air conditioning to the maximum. That creates the greatest load on the system. So we have to maintain bulk power reliability for those days. So that's what we plan the system to do. We also administer requests for interconnection. So if you want to build a power plant or you want to build a transmission line, in addition to going to the state and getting your permits and the federal government to get your permits, the bank to get your capital to build it, you come to the ISO and say you're proposing to build a plant someplace. You give us the specifics. We look to make sure that it won't negatively impact reliability. If we give the green light, then you can go ahead as long as you have all your other permits and funding in place. If we identify a problem, we'll work with either the transmission company or the generator to identify any upgrades on the system that might be necessary to allow them to interconnect without harming reliability. We also periodically look at either one state or a group of states or all six New England states, and we do a transmission analysis. And basically what that is we look 10 years out into the future. We forecast how much load we think is going to be out there, and we analyze whether the existing transmission system is robust enough to handle future growth. If it's not, we will work with the region's transmission developers to identify solutions. They will propose solutions. We'll analyze those. We'll work with our stakeholders to come up with the least cost, most engineering sound solution to meet those transmission needs. And every year we develop a big document called the Regional System Plan. And this document contains all information about all the transmission that's under development, all of the studies we've done, and basically all of the hot topics that we're dealing with. It's about 200 pages, so I didn't bring any printouts. It's on our webpage. I invite you to take a look, especially if you suffer from insomnia. All right, so for the past few years, the ISO has been spending a lot of resources trying to address the biggest challenges we see in the region. And these are really can really be boiled down into three things in particular. And I'll talk more about each of these as we go along. But our dependence on natural gas is sort of the biggest challenge we see. Our system is heavily gas dependent. I'll show you some pretty graphs on that in a second. And it's really the problem essentially boils down to the fact that the natural gas generators in the region don't have firm contracts for the gas that they need to burn to make electricity. They buy it just in time. We call it just in time from the pipe. So in the summertime, not really a big deal. In the wintertime, natural gas goes first to heating our homes and buildings. So the generators have to use what's left over. And there isn't much left over. So there are days in the wintertime when we call up the generators and say, okay, fire it up, guys. And they say, well, we don't have any gas. There's no gas in the pipe. So that's a concern for us because we have to maintain reliability. A lot of the generators burn gas. If they don't have it, obviously, that's a problem from a reliability standpoint. Second issue is power plant retirements. The fleet in general, except for the natural gas fleet, is old and aging. A lot of those plants are 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. If you had a car that old and you only ran it a couple days a year, you wouldn't be surprised if sometimes it doesn't kick over. So same thing with the power plants, essentially. And finally, integrating renewable resources. There's a lot more wind coming on. There's solar coming on the system. And there's nothing wrong with that power at all. You know, we can take all and use all that power. It's just an intermittent resource, we say. You know, the solar only performs when the sun's out. Wind only when it's blowing. When is that going to happen? Well, the sun, we know, except for clouds, we know when the sun's going to be around. Wind is a different story. So it's just a challenge. A lot more analysis is going on to smoothly integrate those resources into the fleet. Yeah.
So if gas is unreliable, what things might ISO be doing to move our electricity distributors off of and generators away from gas toward renewables and to actually try to promote that and use some of the funds that you have for transmission to, you know, like updating the grid for more storage and, you know, more capacity for distributed generators to come online? I mean, what is ISO doing to move us away from the unreliable gas?
Right. So the question is, what's ISO doing to move us away from unreliable gas?
Yeah, to influence the market. Because...
Right. So okay. If we were a policy setting body, like a government, we could say, we're not going to permit any new gas generators, but we're not. We simply manage the markets. So we can send market signals, and we've changed some of our market rules to incentivize power plants to have more than one fuel source. So we can do things like that.
Can you be specific about the rules that you're talking about so I can understand that a little bit? So
there is a couple of things. There's an incentive now for natural gas plants to have a backup fuel source. And the cheapest one so far is oil. So last year we burned a lot of oil because we didn't have the gas on hand. We've also developed a market rule called pay for performance, so that if you have a commitment to provide capacity in our capacity markets, and when we come to call on you, and you can't provide that energy or the capacity at that time, you get whacked. If you overperform, you get more money. So those are the sort of market rules we can do, and we do those. Those were developed in our stakeholder process. So the six state governments weighed in on them. The generators weighed in on them. Environmental groups. So these are sort of open processes that everyone can weigh in. Our rules, our market rules, are all filed and approved with FERC. So we send them down to FERC. We say, these are the changes we want to make to our market rules. We submit them to FERC. Are these okay? And they say yes or no, and then we can implement them. But we can't do it. We can't do anything unilaterally. And we are, as much as possible, we're fuel neutral or resource neutral. So we don't try to put our thumb on the scale and say this resource is good and this one is bad. We don't. We really can't do that. That's a role for governments can do that. But that's not the role of the ISO. Question in the back.
Where would that directive have to, or what branch of government would that directive have to come from?
It would be a combination of federal and state governments would have to be involved with that. It depends on the extent of that regulation. I mean, it could be a regulation from an executive branch of the government. It could be a law generated from the legislature, either at the federal or state level. So it could come from another number of different ways. But the ISO doesn't have that authority to make those kinds of calls. Yep.
Would each state say to you, we want to have in Massachusetts 40% renewables provided, and then you would have to make that happen?
Yes, absolutely. And the states do that. All the states do that. All the states, I'll get to a slide on that, have renewable portfolio standards where they say X amount of their power should come from renewable resources in the future. And our job is to integrate that to make the system run reliably. Yes, so that's underway in all the states.
I just want to ask one other question just so I can understand ISO's power or not. So does ISO not, basically is absolved of being concerned about greenhouse gas emissions? That's not their purview. Would you say that, or is there, okay, that's a very yes or no question.
The question is, does ISO have concerns or
any authority?
Authority over greenhouse
right.
gas? No. The short answer is no. We dispatch a system based on price. And that's how the system is set up, and FERC has approved that system. So we are doing a lot of things to integrate renewable resources to make sure that they can run reliably in the system, but we can't... move the system more towards renewable resources or lower greenhouse gas systems at all. One more question back here.
Yeah, you said you don't have your finger on the scale, but for the 2013-2014 winter reliability program,
yep.
You very specifically asked electric generators who generate with oil to store oil ahead of time and compensate them. You would not do the same thing for generators who generate with gas, allowing them to purchase liquefied natural gas, because that would send the wrong signal to the market. Seems to me that's pretty much saying you have your finger on the scale to try and make it seem that there was not enough gas that year. And we did have price spikes that year, much lower ones this past year when you did allow them to store natural gas.
Right. Well, the oil backup was a out-of-market program and not popular by all people, but deemed necessary to maintain reliability. And that's our prime objective. There was, we didn't do anything to allow or disallow the use of liquefied natural gas this past winter. The price happened to be a lot lower so people could burn it. So
you actually offered to compensate at the same level that you did oil this last winter. And at least 8 of the generators did purchase LNG ahead of time.
All right, it's right. It's a pretty complicated market, and there's a lot of factors that go into each of those elements. But I'm on slide 12. I got a bunch more, so let me cruise through here because we will touch on a bunch more of these issues. These two slides show the changes in the fleet from 2000 to 2014. This is capacity, so this is the ability to produce energy. And back in 2000, over a third of our capacity was oil, and we had about 12% of coal. Moving to 2014, those numbers dropped substantially, and the increase was really taken up by natural gas. So natural gas, a lot of natural gas was built and came online in those years, and the other resources stayed relatively the same. This slide shows energy production, so the actual energy that was produced, not the capacity, but the actual energy. So oil went from 22% back in 2000 to 1% in 2014. Coal, also a dramatic drop, and a huge increase in natural gas. Other resources stayed relatively the same over that time period. So this is the natural gas dependency problem or issue we have in the region. Because there's so much natural gas generation, the wholesale cost of electricity follows the price of natural gas very closely. So in this chart, the orange bar is wholesale electricity, and the blue is natural gas. And these are winters 2012 and 2013 and 2014. As I was describing before, if the natural gas is going to serve heating needs, it's not there for electricity, so there's a shortage, so therefore the price goes way up. Now, there is a retail rates that we all pay aren't this volatile because of the way that the states order the utilities to procure their energy. So retail customers are protected from some of this swings up and down, but this is the wholesale market. Because of the dependence on natural gas, the fleet has gotten a lot cleaner over the years. And so as far as emissions, especially of nitrogen oxides, sulfur dioxide, and CO2 have all come down significantly since 2001, basically because we burn a lot more natural gas now than we have in the past. However, this rosy picture, we do this analysis every year. We use the most recent available data from the EPA to crank out these numbers. There's always a year lag with EPA data, so this is for 2013. 2014 and 2015 won't be quite as rosy. These numbers will change a little bit, basically because of this. This graph shows generation sources from December of this past December to the end of February. So every day is a bar on this chart, and the blue is natural gas. And this is sort of what I would call more sort of normal operating situation in December. There was gas. We did burn some oil, coal, which is in green, and some oil, which is in red here. But basically only to meet the peaks. But then in January and in February, there was much less gas available. So we had ended up burning a lot more coal and oil. And obviously the emissions are going to go up next time we do this analysis. Question?
Was the choice to burn coal and oil was based on the market, true, not the availability, because there was LNG available.
There was
during those times.
Right. So we dispatched a system based on price. So
it's not based on the effect on the environment, it's based on price.
Right. We don't dispatch based on environmental factors. We dispatch based on price.
And who would be responsible for changing that in the ISO? Is that, again, not in your purview, making that decision?
Right. We couldn't make that decision ourselves unilaterally. In theory, FERC could order us to do that, and we could dispatch a system based on emissions, for example. But that's never been done before, so that's sort of a theoretical approach. Mm-hmm. I think there's a question in the back. Yep.
Do you have a slide about tracked methane emissions over the last few years?
I do not, no.
Are you tracking it?
We are not tracking methane, no. These are solely sort of direct inputs into the energy, not the sort of full life cycle of the emissions. Yep.
So with ISO's job being, to be concerned about reliability, I'm just wondering, how do they address the idea of moving all towards gas? Moving towards a single source is not more reliability, that's less reliability. You want to diversify to be more reliable. And yet the way things are going, we're moving towards being less reliable. So in effect, somewhere in there, ISO needs to do something to move our marketplace so that the sources will be different, because moving towards all gas isn't a good idea if reliability is what their main job is.
Right.
So how does that all play into what you have control over, what you don't have control over, and how you can actually make sure that it's going to be reliable? And, if and when the shale runs out, gas runs out, that we have something else ready to go, even if you don't want to go that, it's not reliable.
Right. Well, right now we are subject to market forces, really, that control the cost of generating and what gets dispatched. So while gas is relatively cheap, it's going to still be a primary fuel source for the region until forever. I mean, until...
What about
until,
if it's not reliable and then we just run out and ISO is going to say, well, that's the way the market made us happen. We can't do anything about it.
Right. Well, it won't run out overnight. So we'll foresee it, and if that were to happen, we could at some point change what we're doing. But right now, we have a market-based approach where we dispatch based on price. And that's...
And they believe that gas will be reliable for decades to come.
Right. As I mentioned, we have concerns over the dependency and the large portion of our fleet that is running on gas right now. But we cannot unilaterally change what the fleet is based on a fuel source only. Yep, in the back.
So when you have concerns, you address those concerns to the president or to FERC or to
To the market, basically, to the market participants. So the generators, transmission owners, other stakeholders. We're working very closely with the states. We've been in to talk to all of the governors about this, all the legislatures about this. It's one of our number one points, and the governors just met in Connecticut last week, I think it was, to talk about some alternatives that they are considering. They have the power, and the three southern New England states have issued a draft request for proposals for transmission to bring in more hydropower from Canada. So that's something that's a power and authority that they have and they're exercising. One of the motivating factors for them to do that was the information like this that we are providing to them. So you asked a question earlier about states requiring a certain percentage of renewable resources, and all of the states have renewable portfolio standards, which require a certain percentage of electricity to be sold to consumers come from renewable resources. And these are the Class 1 requirements throughout New England looking out to 2020. So, for example, Connecticut has a requirement that 20% of electricity sold to customers in 2020 should come from renewable resources. Maybe in a couple weeks we'll be able to add Vermont up there. They have a bill right now in their legislature to create a renewable portfolio standard. They have sort of a quasi one right now. But each of the states has pretty aggressive goals for renewables. Yep. Question?
So Massachusetts has kind of about or has already now put a lid on community solar arrays in terms of the credits.
Right, the net metering caps are being reached.
Yeah, so where do you fit in terms of commenting on that?
We wouldn't. I mean, that's a state policy that they have. I'm going to talk a little bit about how we are forecasting solar right now, but it's not for us to tell the state how much of a particular resource that they want to incentivize should be out there.
So when you have your meetings that you just described, where you have meetings with the governors and legislators from these different states, are you guys sitting in a corner not having a conversation? You're just listening? I mean, I'm trying to figure out why you don't have information other than slides to share with them saying, hey, maybe raising this is a good idea or doing this is a good idea. You're saying you don't have the right, but in a conversation, in a room, you have the right.
Right, but so the policymakers make the policy.
I understand that.
And we
can influence.
And we give them information about, you know, if they said, we want only wind power. The only power, for example, we want in our state is from wind. We're going to shut down everything else. We would go to them and say, listen, that's a difficult situation to have because the wind doesn't blow all the time. So we would have that conversation with them under that theoretical situation. But if they wanted to do that, there's nothing that we can do to prevent them from doing that.
So if they say we want gas, do you say that's not reliable?
You keep saying gas is not reliable. There's not enough capacity right now to serve
As a long-term, in decades into the future, being a single source like that, not a good idea.
We point them to things like this and say, there's trouble with the existing gas capacity. But over the long run, I mean, gas is a fuel that can be used just like any other fuel to make electricity. So that's where we are. Let me get through a little bit more. Talk about what this slide shows, what generating resources are in our interconnection queue. So as I mentioned before, if you want to build a new plant, you come to the ISO. So 2/3 of them are natural gas. The rest is essentially wind. So no one's proposing to build any other sort of resource, really, to make electricity in New England other than gas and wind. Question?
Although solar has such a short time period, it doesn't usually come up in your connection queue other than briefly.
there's almost no solar that's connected to the transmission grid. It's all connected at the distribution level. And this is only, we only deal in the world of transmission system interconnected resources. I'll talk about solar in a sec. So before I get to solar and wind, energy efficiency. So the six New England states are really sort of poster children for advanced energy efficiency programs. They've been recognized by the American Council for an Energy Efficiency Economy. Massachusetts, I think this is their fourth year in a row, is number one. And this is sort of state-sponsored energy efficiency programs. And we all pay on our electricity bill every month. We pay a charge that provides revenue for energy efficiency programs that go to things like paying down the cost of LED lighting and other things. A question?
I heard from someone, I think in Maine, I'm pretty sure, that the governor just cut the funding for the energy efficiency program tremendously. Is that so? And if so, why would
he do that? It's actually the Maine Public Utility Commission interpreted the statute in such a way that they're now proposing to spend only about a third of the money that they had, that the legislature allocated, the legislature thought they allocated. So there's a disagreement between the legislature and the PUC now in Maine on that, and the legislature might step in and remedy that problem or might not. We don't know. We're keeping a close eye on that because that's a significant chunk. So the states are spending a lot of money on these energy efficiency programs, over $3 billion from 2009 to 13, and we're forecasting more than $6 billion from 2019 to 2024. And this slide shows what the impact of those energy efficiency programs are on both the peak load, which is on the right, and the energy, which is on on the right, the gigawatt hours here, annual energy. So this yellow line is basically sort of a business as usual. If there's no energy efficiency out there, we would expect the energy demand going out from 2015 to 2024 to increase. Energy efficiency participates in a forward capacity market, and that's represented in this dark blue line right here. So we know exactly how much energy efficiency is going to be out there in the next 3 or 4 years. That's a known factor for us. So that reduces the overall energy use. Then we developed a forecast looking out beyond the time period of our capacity market based on what the states believe they're going to be spending on energy efficiency and what the energy efficiency providers, which is generally the utilities, how much they, for each dollar, how many kilowatts they can save. So it's a pretty simple calculation when you get down to it. And we see basically flat energy use going out into the future is essentially flat. And this on the right is the peak. So peak would be growing under business as usual, but the rate of growth of peak is declining. It's still growing, but it is not growing nearly as fast as it would be without energy efficiency resources in the marketplace. So we started the energy efficiency forecasting process back in 2012. In 2013, stakeholders got together and said, ISO, can you do the same thing with distributed resources, primarily solar, the small distributed solar you see on people's rooftops? And we said, okay, we'll look into it. So first thing we did was we brought together a group of experts to help us develop a methodology to forecast and to provide information from experts in the field of solar. So we developed that forecast, and what we mean by distributed generation is things that are under 5 megawatts, connected to the distribution system. And these things are not visible to the ISO. So our control room, we don't see these. We see it as just a small diminution in the amount of load out there. But we have no control over them and no visibility on them. So it was important for us to try to get our handle on how much is out there. So we've been doing that. And we just published our second PV forecast. And this is sort of the results. So we surveyed every utility in the state and asked them, how much do you have? Because they know how much they have because it's hooked up to their distribution systems. And they have to approve and do all the interconnections. So there's over 900 megawatts now This was through the end of 2014. That's probably well over 1,000 by this point. And we're projecting about 2,400 megawatts of PV to be online by 2024.
Does this forecast take into account any possible incentives that might develop, that might be offered in the six? Is this for the six states?
Yep, this is for the six states. So this is all, this is a result of those policies and the federal policies. So this is a result of what state and federal policies, because not very many people are putting up solar absent any subsidies. We don't think. We don't, I mean, if you know differently, we'd love to hear. But most people take advantage of the incentives to put solar up.
I just wanted to ask you a question about the efficiency. Mm-hmm. So do you guys do any analysis of not just the efficiency and how much, you know, we're saving, which is good, but we could do a lot better. So I'm wondering if you do studies to show what's our capacity to do,
to be
much more efficient, which we could be.
We do not do that. There are other groups who provide those kind of studies. NEEP is one of them, the Northeastern Energy Efficiency Partnership. So, and some of the states have done that for their own use.
But did ISO do? You're just showing us this information. It's not something that you have control over efficiency programs or do
right. No, we don't
about efficiency. You're just showing us what's been going on.
Right. So when our system planners are looking out into the future to see how much transmission we might need, instead of using these numbers, which we would have in the past, now they're using these numbers. So that's having an impact on the shape of the grid to come, because the energy efficiency is really reducing the demand for power. Yes?
But somewhere in here, I've heard that your forecast, or that, not you, but that there's a forecast for a greater need for natural gas. And I guess the reason I just half an hour south here, there's a 36 inch pipe line that is being proposed. And it just seems like it's a foregone conclusion on the part of some people that we're going to need that. Can you speak to that for a minute?
We're not for or against any individual project. That project is being brought to the market by people who think they can make money from it. So if it gets developed, the gas plants will use the gas from it. If it doesn't, they won't. So let me crank through a few more here. We've talked about a lot of this. So there's the one thing, the sort of second major bullet here. We've identified about 8,300 megawatts of generation resources that are at risk of retirement. These are generally the older coal and oil units. If they all do go away, then we're going to have to find new generating resources. We already know of 3,500 megawatts that are going to retire in the next couple of years. And these are some of the big units here. Vermont Yankee closed down, Salem Harbor, and a real big one, Brayton Point, 1,500 megawatts down on the Mass Rhode Island border there. And then the table just shows sort of what states all those projects are in. There are, and this is, I'm just about wrapping up here. There are a number of merchant transmission lines that are being proposed in the region. Most of them are being proposed to bring hydropower, wind power down from Canada into New England. The way the transmission development works in New England, for projects that are needed to maintain reliability, those projects, the cost of those are split among the six states depending on, or in accordance with their load. So Massachusetts is about 45% of all the energy load in New England. So the transmission projects that are needed for reliability, ratepayers in Massachusetts pay 45% of those. Vermont is a small state, 4% of the total load. So every transmission project they pay 4% of. These are the merchant transmission lines. So these are not needed necessarily for reliability, but these are being developed and proposed because the owners think that there is a way to make money. So we are also doing reliability assessments of these projects as well. And some of these could potentially meet the, we talked a little bit about the state's request for proposal for new transmission to bring in low-carbon fuel, low-carbon energy from Canada. So some of these could vie for that spot. And this is my last slide. We have a number. Our website has new and improved. We have a number of resources there. We also have an app for the smartphone, which shows you sort of minute by minute what the fuel mix is in New England, what the prices are. You can see those. And with that, I will conclude. And I think we have about five more minutes, so I can take a few more questions if you like. And I'm going to go in the back. Yep.
Easy one. I'm sorry. What's the website address?
It's www.iso-ne.com.
Thank you.
Sure. Yep.
There was a study, I believe, out of Harvard that showed that a huge amount of gas is leaking out of the existing pipelines. In the interest of energy efficiency and reliability, shouldn't you be taking a stand on better maintenance of the existing pipelines?
Yeah, so maintenance and those sorts of sort of cradle to grave of a fuel source, we don't get involved with. I mean, there's coal gets developed from blowing up mountaintops in Virginia and Kentucky, and we don't weigh in on the development of that. So, you know, that's for the states, the federal government, and for our concerned citizens to be advocating for, but it's not the role of the ISO. And anyway, way in the back.
My question is on hydrovac.
Yep.
I was wondering if you knew, what's the percentage of power from hydrovac that is in our in your grid?
Last year, we got about 16% of our power from imports. A lot of that was Hydro-Quebec power, but we also have power that comes in from New Brunswick and from New York as well. I don't have the breakdown of those specifically, but...
Okay, so it's about 16% total from the Canadians. Well, no, actually, you said New York.
Yeah, Canadians and New York is about 16% of our power.
And you said earlier, I think, that you guys are looking to perhaps buy more from Hydro-Quebec or from Canadian sources in the future.
Well, the states are right now looking at ways to increase transmission, and some of the company, the private companies, Hydro-Quebec has got a, this, I don't know if you've, you've heard about the Northern Pass project proposed through New Hampshire. That's being developed by utilities in New England and Hydro-Quebec jointly. That would bring about 1,200 megawatts of power in through New Hampshire. So that's one of the projects that is not a reliability project. That one, so it's, you know, one of several merchant projects that are being developed out there. So we do the reliability impact studies for those. So we'll say, you know, will 1,200 megawatts being delivered at the point where they're going to interconnect be okay for the system? Will it cause problems or won't it? So that's our role.
Just one quick last one on
Yep.
that topic. It is the price from an exporter like Hydro-Quebec still tied to the price of what it would cost to generate from fossil fuel, or is that not the case anymore? Or
well, Hydro-Quebec is free to charge whatever they want to charge for their power. They're going to charge a lot more than it is to generate it to make profit, because that's their business. And New England has the highest, basically highest wholesale market, highest wholesale energy prices in North America. So a lot of people want to sell their power here. So they will, it will be sold, you know, at a price that's competitive with the market.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I have a question related to that. So are you all, is it on your radar at all? Senator Barrett has proposed carbon pricing legislation in the Mass State House. We put a tax on fossil fuels. Will that affect you all in any way?
It could. I mean, we already have one. We have Reggie. So every fossil fuel generator needs to buy carbon offset credits. So we already have a regional system like that. You know, that's just is a part of the cost for generators. So when they bid their power into market, they take that into account. So we, you know, we don't feel one way or the other for that. That's one of their costs.
I mean, I think it's supposed to be revenue neutral, so in some sense it might not. It might be a wash, but it might. But if that does, if it does get passed sooner rather than later, that might make it more attractive to buy more power from the grid, as opposed to.
It could, right? Theoretically, could, right? Yes.
If I can, a comment and two questions. Your slide about the reduced emissions of gas is misleading because it doesn't talk about the total destructive effect of fracking, the whole process. It just talks about the emissions.
Just emissions.
Right.
Right. End of the pipe on our side. Right. And I hope I didn't lead you to believe it was anything but that.
I just wanted to highlight that.
Yep. Understood.
The program you alluded to that Walmart's doing where they have alternate lights off, can we do that elsewhere? Can ISO make that open, happen elsewhere, like everywhere, give incentives, whatever? Are you able to make that happen more?
So not being a policy-creating body, not having regulatory authority over anyone, our marketplace is one where companies who make that happen get paid for doing that. So in a sense, the markets that we oversee allow those companies to make money from those kinds of programs, just like a generator would. They're paid the same way a generator. So say that program saves 100 megawatts. It would be paid the same way as a generator who's making 100 megawatts of power from whatever fuel source you want. So the marketplace is designed to be neutral in that aspect. So the marketplace can and should incentivize that kind of development as well. So it's up to individual companies. There are, you know, like Enternoc and a few private companies who do those kinds of programs. And if they can make money at it, then they'll do more of it.
Who pays for that? Who pays them? It's not that simple.
So those programs, just like generators, are paid by everyone. So the ratepayers, as part of your electricity bill, is the charges for basically generation, and it's in there. You know, if you really looked at the electricity bill, it's sort of got dozens and dozens and dozens of line items. Not all of them are listed out specifically, but just like you would pay a generator for producing power to come to your house, you pay companies for not producing power or for not using power the
so
same
it's,
way.
So it's the flip side of if I had solar panels and I had a net overage and it went back into the grid and I would get credit for that. They don't use power and they get money for that.
Right. Yep.
Interesting.
Well, can that be expanded? Thank you for coming, Eric.
All right. Thank you.